This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science. Today we delve into the amazing world of martial arts and guarantee by the end of this show you'll possess the skills of a ninja. Okay, we may have to retract that last statement.
You think? A judo, a chop, chop, chop.
Okay, put it this way. You may possess the skills of a ninja. You may not. How's that?
Better? Yeah, that's better. That's a lot better. You know what I mean? That was a great disclaimer, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm going with you're going to be a ninja, a kick-ass ninja, and teaching us to fight like a physicist will be Jason Falcon. And teaching us to fight like a physicist is Jason Falcon, author of, you guessed it, Fight Like a Physicist.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And also on the show is our good friend from Lynchburg College, Virginia, Professor Eric Goff, author of Gold Medal Physics, and whose new book is coming out in 2018, and it's called The Science Behind Krav Maga, the Israeli military fighting technique.
Yeah, so once again, two perfect guests for Playing with Science.
That's right.
Okay.
I love this show, man.
See, martial arts for me, you go much further than kung fu. Everybody knows karate.
Right.
Or they know of karate. And then there's judo, jiu-jitsu, and taekwondo, and all these different things that come together. And you're thinking, the mad kids in the class, they're going there because they want to beat people up. And then there's these other guys who are going there, I'm fed up being beaten up.
Right.
I'm going to go and learn martial arts.
Exactly.
So it's and then the pop culture explodes, and you look no further than Bruce Lee.
Ah, the man himself, entering the dragon. Oh, man, Fists of Fury.
And however long they were made ago, you still watch them and go, wow.
As a matter of fact, the cool thing is, I found this video online.
You want to tell us publicly about this?
Yeah. And I got to tell you, it's this great video of they're talking about whether or not Bruce Lee would be a great MMA fighter.
Oh.
And we should take a listen to it. Just take a listen to this. It's a guy just narrating. And as he's narrating, you need to just kind of imagine Bruce Lee very, very, very quickly with his hands doing movements, like these incredible movements that you can barely see. That's how fast his hands are going. Take a listen.
Bruce Lee's style of Jeet Kune Do is known as the way of the intercepting fist. And if we reference a line from his Tao of Jeet Kune Do, quote, "The counterattack calls for the greatest skill, the most perfect planning, and the most delicate execution of all fighting techniques. It is the greatest art in fighting, the art of the champion." Understanding this makes better sense of what he's doing. Throughout the sparring, he essentially feels his opponent's rhythm, and when he feels or sees breaks in his opponent's rhythm, with his lead leg or lead hand, he counters his opponent amidst their attack. He leads with his right hand and right leg, taking the stance from fencing philosophy. It almost looks like Bruce is holding an epee or fencing sword in the way he holds his right hand out. If you also notice, Bruce's stance is very balanced. Not all the weight on his lead nor all the weight on the back leg, allowing him to move in and out very efficiently. His training was different, the same way a boxer's training is different from a mixed martial artist. And so when you see him doing two-finger push-ups, he's not doing that just for show. He's doing it because it allows him to more efficiently rip your throat from your neck, eliminate your eyes, exploit vulnerable areas of your body. And if he misses, and say hits your skull, minimizes injury. But considering the speed, precision, and his Tao of striking as you come in, he probably will not miss. So that leads to another question. What if Bruce did compete in MMA?
The cool thing is, like, you know, this Jeet Kune Do is, you know, his style. He kind of, like, perfected and, you know, he kind of augmented this style to create his own kind of martial arts. So,
but it's never, it gets, it gives me the feeling martial arts is ever evolving. And we'll probably get into this with the good professor, Eric Goff.
Yes.
But, I mean, Bruce Lee was a student of Ip Man. And if you've ever seen the movie Ip Man, and there's an Ip Man 2 and everything else, it's, you know, go check it out.
So Ip Man was a real man?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so there was the movie with Jason Lee, Bruce Lee's son.
Yes.
And I think I remember one scene, there is a black and white photograph in a frame on a desk with Ip Man and Bruce Lee. And it was just kind of like a homage to the past and where Bruce had come from himself. So
And his lineage goes down even further, because then Bruce trained somebody who trained somebody who's now Conor McGregor's trainer, you know. And so it's funny. But they all kind of change things to their own needs and liking.
And then one of Bruce Lee's students was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Absolutely.
I mean, how...
Who we had on the show, and he talked about
that. How amazing that Bruce Lee, this fat-free little guy with unbelievable speed, has a 7'2" basketball star, and is still the all-time point scorer and record holder in the NBA. So it really is just an interesting sport. So let's welcome our first guest, Jason Thalken. Thanks for joining us, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
We are fabulous. Thank you for asking. So, for those of you who are not familiar with Jason Thalken, he has a PhD in physics, has studied and competed in 8 martial arts. I won't mention how long, just because it might offend him, and I don't want to offend a guy who's got that much talent in his hands. But he does have a black belt in Hapkido.
Hapkido?
Yes, and he also has a book to his name. He is the author of Fight Like a Physicist.
Of course.
And The Incredible Science Behind Martial Arts. Jason, welcome to Playing with Science. Have I left anything
out? Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
So I got to know, man. I'm really ignorant here. This is the first time in my life I have ever heard of Hapkido. What is Hapkido?
So Hapkido is a Korean martial art, which it came from the Japanese jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
All right.
So you know, Korea's got Taekwondo, which largely stemmed from Japanese karate, and Hapkido, which largely stemmed from jiu-jitsu.
Let's address the obvious point here. Do physicists have an advantage when it comes to martial arts because of their scientific background and the way that they approach things and the understanding of physics?
I would say absolutely. But you know, the difference is, you know, you might think that the advantage happens like in real time in the fight, but really the advantage comes to what you think about when you train. You know, how you train, stuff like that. And that's sort of the mindset I try to get at in the book is, you know, try to approach your training like you're a scientist.
So when you're approaching your training like a scientist, is it a matter of knowing the principles of physics behind what you're doing? Is it a matter of breaking down your regimen in such a way where you're using or you're looking at it like it's a scientific discipline? Is it applying the laws of physics themselves in individual cases? How exactly are you approaching the fighting or the training as a scientist?
So some of it is stuff like understanding a law of physics here and there. So if you understand something like your center of gravity, it'll help you out so much when it comes to takedowns. That's a simple explanation. So your center of gravity is about, let's say like 1.5-2 inches below your belly button.
Okay.
And you can think of that as sort of your center point. That's where you would balance no matter what orientation you're in. So if someone pushes you above your center of gravity, you'll lean back. Mm-hmm. If they push you below your center of gravity, you'll flop forward.
Gotcha.
And so any takedown, whether it's a sweep or a takedown or a tackle or even just a push or a throw, it all comes down to moving that center of gravity away from the supports that you have, which is your, usually it's your 2 feet if we're talking about fighting from a standing position.
Okay.
So the only things you need to consider are what's going on with that center of gravity and where are the supports and why can they not get back under that center of gravity before it hits the ground. That basic understanding of that principle will get you through your training a lot easier. So now instead of having to memorize, oh, I have to do this specific sweep in this specific way, you understand why that technique is the way it is. You know, you understand, because in a, you know, in a fight, in a tournament, in a competition, nothing turns out the way you planned it to. You know, nothing's a, you know, as perfect as you practiced it.
Right.
But if you understand why the technique is the way it is, then you'll know what to do when it's not perfect. You know?
All right. We'll talk about takedowns and center of gravities and axis and all the rest of it. But let's sort of move on to another subject. Punches.
Yeah. So punches are actually really interesting thing. First thing that a lot of people look at when they look at a punch is like, oh, you know, like how much force was behind your punch? And it's not even that. There's something really weird about punches, because if you look at the total force of a punch, it's not that big. So if you wanted to look at the total force of a push, like if I just pushed you, way more than a punch.
So are you saying it's better to get a push in than a punch in?
Well, it all comes down to what are you trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish with this punch? So there's really two sort of extremes you can put into a punch. And one is try and put as much of your body weight as possible behind it. Try to use as much of your muscles as you can once contact has been made to get as much push. And that will knock your opponent back. It can force the wind out of your opponent. If you've actually hit the head far away from the center of rotation, you can get the head rotating and maybe get a KO. But that's one thing you can do with a punch. But another is you can try and cause pain. You can try and cause, you know, localized tissue damage, something like that. And in that case, really what you need to do instead of trying to just get a lot of push out of your punch is try and get a whole lot of, let's say, snap into it.
Is there a different technique to punching? Because when you talk about punching, you immediately think of boxing, classic boxing, right, in the ring.
Yeah.
As opposed to the way in any of your 8 martial arts you are taught differently in terms of punching as a technique.
Yeah, so there's actually lots of different ways to punch. And some take a little more of one of those sides. So traditional boxing punches tend to go a little more along the throw your weight into it side.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is we actually have boxing gloves. And that does two things. It slows down the arm speed by... I tested it myself, and on myself, it slowed down my arm speed about 30%.
Wow.
So that's, you know, if you're just throwing punches with your own hand, that's how much slower it goes. But the other piece of that is boxing gloves actually absorb the energy of impact, which is local to the area that you're hitting. So if you hit someone with a boxing glove, it will do less localized structural damage. So you're not going to cause as much bruising. You're not going to break as many bones. You're
right,
not going
to cause. I mean, it's there to kind of protect you from being beat to death. You know, the gloves, right?
Well, no, it's there to protect the hands from broken bones and the face from superficial injuries. But the types of injuries that would actually kill you, it does not protect against.
Oh, okay.
Well, ooh.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. That's, by the way, Jason, that's why I don't box. There you go.
What happens, Jason,
if
I punch from, say, a central position in my chest and punch forward, using my elbow as it is, as a hinge.
Like, yeah.
Or
traditional jab.
Yeah, or do, when I rotate, and I've just hit the mic, that's the sound engineer hates me now. If I rotate as I punch, what sort of difference, what are, am I increasing or decreasing force while I throw that punch and rotate?
Yeah, so there's actually, it's really interesting if you look at all the debates over different techniques and stuff. The style of punching where you're sort of punching from your shoulder and rotating your whole body into the punch, mm-hmm. Is something that is relatively modern, and I believe is associated more with boxing gloves than anything else. So we've got boxing gloves that can protect the hand. So all of a sudden you can put way more force behind your punches than you could before without, you know, destroying your own fists. So now we start putting our whole body weight behind it as we punch. But if you go back, like, I think if you read Jack Dempsey's book,
all right.
The name of the book escapes me, I'm sorry, but he actually trained, or learned before a lot of that came to be developed. And he actually recommends a quick straight left punch with a vertical fist that's, much more like what you were just describing.
Yeah, nobody fights like that anymore. That's like, you know, that's like old-timey boxing.
but in
order to fight like that, you have to have a handlebar mustache. That's
But it obviously has an effective reason for being used.
But what I'm saying is I think the gear has a lot of sway into how that style changed over time. There's other styles that had the same sorts of punches before. So traditional Kung Fu and Wing Chun both have that from the center vertical fist punch.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, other styles, and it's tough because, Western boxing did have a strong influence.
Listen, we got to take a break, right, Gary?
We do. And Chuck's thinking about who he wants to knock out first. He's going to draw up a list during the break.
I am putting that list together right now. Going to do a whole lot of flicking and rotating and, at least thinking about it. Who am I kidding? I'm not hitting anybody.
No, he's not. Right, we're going to take that break. Jason Thelkin, fabulous to have him on. And don't forget, author of Fight Like a Physicist. Yes, please go check that book out. It is splendid, covers an awful lot of subject matter. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, our good friend Professor Eric Goff from Lynchburg College in Virginia will be our next expert on martial arts. Stick around, we'll be back shortly.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Welcome back. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Knight.
And this, of course, is still Playing with Science. Yesterday, we are talking martial arts and the physics therein. And joining us now is our very good friend, Professor Eric Goff, Professor of Physics at Lynchburg College, Virginia, author of Gold Medal Physics, The Science of Sports, and not just a man with a plan, but a man with a book coming out next year. That'll be 2018. The Science Behind Krav Maga, which, if I'm not mistaken, Professor, is the hand-to-hand martial arts of the Israeli military, is it not?
That's right. The Israeli Defense Forces employ this, and it's becoming a much more popular sport here in the U.S. You're seeing a lot of billboards going up for Krav Maga instruction these days.
Well, what is it? I mean, it sounds like, I got to tell you, when you talk about the martial arts, you got some cool names out there, okay? You got your judo. All right.
Your Aikido.
Your Aikido. Okay, that sounds cool. Your jiu-jitsu, which sounds very dangerous. Even karate, which is like, oh, I know what I'm getting into. But then you say Krav Maga, and it sounds like...
You're thinking it's food again, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm like, Krav Maga. Delicious. You know what? I had the best Krav Maga the other night, I got to tell you. It was unbelievable. I'm telling you, the outside was crispy. The inside was tender. It was the best Krav Maga I've ever had.
My stomach's already rumbling. Behave yourself.
All right, so what is Krav Maga?
Firstly, Professor, welcome back to Playing with Science. Please put this man in his place. Thank you.
Well, if Chuck had good Krav Maga the other night, his face would look a lot different, I think.
All right,
Professor.
School's in.
Way to go. Nicely done, my friend.
So is it kicks, flicks, all the sort of flashy stuff, or is this more hand-to-hand, let's sort of like end up wrestling, or is it a combination of a lot of different martial arts?
Is it eye gouging and like rip your throat out stuff?
It's got some of that in there. I've studied karate myself. I'm a first degree black belt, and I really enjoy karate. But it has a lot of elegant katas and movements. But Krav Maga is a much more realistic fighting system. So I think I'd be more comfortable knowing a little bit more Krav Maga than karate if I were on a dark sidewalk somewhere and had to fight somebody.
I'm guessing that the good professor never has an issue with pupils.
Yeah.
He's on a lecture.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm sure there's a great deal of discipline in the professor's class. So Krav Maga is basically a street fighting style then, huh?
It is. I mean, you've got some Aikido in there. You've got some boxing, wrestling, some karate. I mean, you've got an amalgam of all kinds of different systems. And it's an ever-evolving system. It employs whatever works well, and it changes techniques as new ways to perform them come along.
If we looked at it from a point of view of physics, what would be the best way to do exactly what Chuck's just said, neutralize the opponent in super quick time?
So typically somebody might be swinging a punch. They could have a knife. We practice gun to the head. We practice all kinds of different scenarios.
Wow.
And the idea is to get out of a danger zone very quickly. So get the gun away from your head, get the knife away from you. And sometimes all it takes is a simple deflection or a parry. And you move in close. This is close quarters fighting. Mm-hmm. So you want to get into the opponent's space, administer defensive tactics very quickly, combatives very quickly, and then hopefully be able to evacuate the danger zone without continuing the attack.
Mm. So from a physics standpoint, what is the most powerful human action that you can take against an opponent? From a physics standpoint, where can you apply the most force to create a striking blow that will render your opponent neutralized?
Yeah, good question.
Well, sometimes the best thing you can do is just get out of the way. I mean, if somebody's charging you and or coming at you with a, you know, a knife or something, if you could just barely parry the object or the person, sometimes the goal is to just disrupt their balance. So you want to just get the person offset a little bit from balance, and then you go in very quickly. If you're in close, take advantage of what creates the most amount of torque and swinging something very quickly. So an elbow might be a much easier thing to swing in close than trying to swing like a hammer fist or some other object where you've got more mass farther away from you. So the idea is when they're in close, try to do things very quickly, short range techniques, and then get out of the way.
That's very much like Aikido. So, you know, using your knees and your elbows and your shins in close as bludgeoning objects to
yeah,
to
so we also opponent. Use, and we do some Aikido techniques with sticks as well, disarming with sticks, offensive approaches with sticks, anything that's laying around that can be used as a weapon is an option.
Go back to the point where you said if someone was charging you with a knife, a stick, or whatever it was. So if I get this right, you are going to use their asset, which is their speed towards you, as a weakness. So this is art of war. The
yes.
strength of an opponent
but
is their weakness.
Suit, yeah.
Yeah, so exactly. That's what I've – in my mind, I'm seeing you wait and wait, having practiced this strategy, mm-hmm. and then just move to one side and then use – maybe an elbow or whatever it might be, to tilt that axis of your opponent and take them off balance.
That's right. If they're coming at you in a straight line, mm-hmm. you know, we're taught a circle is going to beat a straight line and a straight line is going to beat a circle. So if we can rotate out of the way
right.
on a linear attack, then the person's momentum is moving in a direction away from us. And all we have to do is a very quick, you know, punch from the side or a kick or something that can disrupt that person's balance, go in very quickly for another set of combatives, and then get out of the way.
Is there a particular angle at which a person will lose their balance, or is that down to the shape and the actual center of mass and center of gravity of each individual?
We just need to get the center of mass over a pivot point. So very simple demo you can do is just stand against a wall with your back against a wall, lift your leg out, and you're inevitably going to fall forward. You cannot lift your leg up and stay upright against that wall because your center mass is moving forward over your foot. So the idea is if somebody is attacking you, if you can get their body manipulated in a certain way where you get the center mass over a foot, the chances of them falling are going to go up precipitously.
I wonder how many people listening to this are actually now making a move towards the wall.
To see if they can actually lift their leg up without falling forward. Yes.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
and is there is it permissible in Krav Maga or any other martial arts, when you do put your opponent off balance, is it okay to say ole and allow them to go by?
I'm sure, but you better be very good at what you're doing because they're going to come back.
Oh, yeah. Your backside's going to take a size 10 to it for sure. If we move away from Krav Maga, you've worked on an article for the Ring magazine on boxing?
Yeah, we've looked at different punch techniques. We've looked at punch speeds. If you do just kind of a standard jab cross combination. Mm-hmm. We also do this in Krav Maga. You can get speeds close to 20 miles an hour with these jabs and crosses.
Wow.
And one thing to keep in mind when you're punching someone, if you extend your arm out straight, when your arm reaches its full straight extension, your fist is moving at 0 miles an hour. If it wasn't, it would keep moving and your arm would stretch. So the maximum speed of your punch is going to be about halfway into that extended arm.
Gotcha.
So
is it better to be closer and hit somebody halfway through a punch than to hit them at the end of a punch?
Absolutely. Your elbow is going to be bent about 90 degrees or so when your fist is moving at its maximum speed. And then as the fist extends, your fist has to, or the arm extends, the fist has to slow down to zero when you get to a fully extended arm. So you have this rising speed and then, you know, going back down when the arm is extended. So the most damage on the punch is going to be when the elbow's bent.
Oh, wow.
So when I look at the biomechanics of my shoulder, my elbow, my fist, if we're going to call it that, my shoulder's not built for kind of rotating around the outside. It's more upwards in a vertical, upwards and downwards, and my elbow is a hinge. So how do we utilize the way we're constructed to the most effect if we are to throw punches?
Well, the most effective way is to not just use your arm and shoulder. You really want to engage your core, this kinetic linking that we talk about, where you're starting from the feet, you're going to start rotating your body into the punch. So your entire torso is creating a rotation. So you've got a lot of stored energy that you're going to convert to kinetic energy as through that rotation.
So you really want to be rotating your trunk so that you are using, it's almost like a golf swing, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the same with the throwing action, a golf swing.
Right.
We're getting the same with the rotation for a kick in martial arts. The same thing applies. Right. You're maximizing the energy. Is that right, Professor? By incorporating rotation.
That's right. And when you have a, like, for example, a side kick, you know, we also use side kicks, front kicks, back kicks in Krav Maga as well as karate. The idea is you're going to cock your leg for a kick, so you're going to store a bunch of energy like a spring in your leg when you've got your leg cocked, and then you release that energy as you're kicking, and you're going to rotate your hips at the same time. So you're trying to get as much energy released during the kick or the punch as you can.
When I've spoken to boxers and to people who practice martial arts, they said some guys punch harder than others, and it's not the big muscly guys that you'd think would have the hardest punches. Quite often it's the little guys with not a lot of bulk, but they punch so hard. Is that down to rotation, or is it something else that they're employing?
A lot of it's rotation. I mean, keep in mind your kinetic energy grows like the square of your speed and only the first power of your mass. So if you can get a lot of extra speed going in that punch, somebody's going to feel that a little bit more than kind of a lumbering, bigger mass fist coming at you.
Wow. So really, it's more about the speed and the rotation than it is about, oh, I'm a big, strong guy.
Sure. I mean, you really want to get hit with that speed. I mean, when these punches are coming at you at 15 to 20 miles an hour when you're getting hit, you're going to feel it.
I have a friend, he's got an older guy, there's nothing of him. And he just turns around to me and says, this guy can punch so hard, it's ridiculous.
Wow.
And you're looking at him thinking, he couldn't punch his way out of a wet paper bag. Yeah, when the martial arts expert says, this guy can punch, you're thinking, okay.
Right.
Okay, thank you to Professor Eric Goff. We are going to take a break. We'll have more on martial arts when we get back, so stick around. It'll be kick-ass.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Welcome back. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And this, of course, how you already know, but I'll tell you anyway, is Playing with Science. Today, it's all about martial arts. Yes. Right. And joining us, our very good friend, Professor Eric Goff from Lynchburg College in Virginia, the author of Gold Medal Physics and a man with a book about to come out sometime in 2018.
Yes.
Called The Science Behind Krav Maga. Krav Maga, yes.
Krav Maga.
Krav Maga. Is there anything that you've brought forward in that book that you would care to share with us right now?
Sure. So at the end of the year, I'm going to be submitting Warrior Krav Maga Science to my publisher, and hopefully next year we'll see this out on the shelves. And I've taken a lot of pictures. I train at Forest Super Kicks here in Virginia, in Forest, Virginia. My instructor, Clifton Abercrombie, has been very helpful to help me with a lot of filming.
Wait and a minute, guy, Professor, did you say that your dojo is named Super Kicks?
It is, because we also do karate there as well.
Okay. Now, listen, I'm saying this because I'm about 1,000 miles away from you.
Uh-huh.
That's the dumbest name for a dojo I ever heard in my life. Super Kicks?
But sounds you're like not going to forget it, are you?
Okay, you're right about that, because it sounds like it should be in a mall cutting hair or something. I'm joking.
You've so set yourself up for trouble.
No, listen, Professor, let me just say this. Those are jokes, and I am sorry.
No.
Now that I know you're a first-degree black belt.
I don't mind the humor, but I don't mind advertising his facility, because my instructor, Mr. Abercrombie, he is incredible. And what he's done with me with this book is to help me film a lot of the techniques that are going to appear in the book to be described with using physics.
Professor, your instructor, when you started to discuss things with him about martial arts, about Krav Maga, did you get the feeling this guy had the physics aspect of it covered already, or he'd just learned because he was into martial arts?
Well, the way I describe it in the book is I think people like that who've been training for years in these systems have an intuitive physics.
Yes.
And I don't even care if the vocabulary is not there or the mathematics isn't there. There's an intuitive understanding that's developed over many years of training for certain techniques that work. So he may not be able to give me all the nice physics for why something's working, but as he starts explaining a technique to me, I start putting the physics together in my head based on what he's telling me. So what I'm trying to do is put into the book what an instructor would tell you for something working, and then put the physics language with it, so that somebody who's got kind of a science interest will at least be able to read it and say, oh, I see why that's working.
That's great. So what you're really doing is translating the language of fighting or martial arts into physics.
That's right. And, you know, physics is the basis for all the sciences. So, I mean, it's in everything we do, and it's certainly in Krav Maga.
So it's mechanical physics. And do we now realize that physics professors make better martial artists?
Not necessarily. I mean, we have a lot of things we have to do besides training, so we don't have that time in the gym that's going to help us make have our bodies be weapons of mass destruction.
Cool. Well, I still wouldn't want to mess with you.
No.
By the way. I want you on my side is what I'm saying. So next time we go drinking, I'm picking a fight, and then I'm calling on you.
Okay. Well, I'm not a huge fan of fighting personally, but I hope to learn something.
I think the best thing to do, Professor, is avoid the drinking with Chuck to begin with.
Once again, words of wisdom.
Okay, Eric. Sort of pop culture. Give me the mixed martial arts. Out of all, is there a hierarchy to which one is the best, which one is the most effective?
I don't know that I would rank them that way. Each one has its own benefits. Each one emphasizes certain skills over others.
Mm-hmm.
Krav Maga is an amalgam of many systems, so it borrows from boxing and wrestling and aikido, judo, karate. It doesn't mind stealing from other systems to have a great amalgam of whatever works.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at fighting just in general, who is superior in terms of fighter? Is it the style? Some people say Muhammad Ali, greatest fighter of all time. But, of course, he's the greatest boxer of all time. Who in your mind is the greatest fighter of all time?
Oh, good grief. I would probably feel more comfortable walking down an alley with one of the MMA guys over a boxer. I think those guys are going to be much more conditioned for street fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mayweather was clearly a better boxer in the ring, but I think if they had gone an MMA style, I think McGregor would have
Oh, he would have murdered him.
Murdered him,
Literally, he beat Well, you can't be up on charges because you murdered him in the ring. But right now, quite frankly, people would be like, what a shame we lost Floyd Mayweather. And by when I say people, I mean four people would say that, because that's about the only people that
you
would
are
say
cruel.
That. I am.
Professor, out of the different fighting styles, which one, to your mind, as a physicist, applies the most science?
Great question. What is the most physics of fighting?
Well, given that I don't think there's really anything that science can't touch, describe, or help you understand, I would say that science is going to help you with all of them. I mean, certainly physics is the most fundamental science. So when we're looking at all the martial arts systems, whether you're looking at elegant katas and karate, you're looking at the street fighting of Krav Maga, I mean, physics is going to help you understand all of those movements.
Okay, let's talk about the man.
You can't do a show on martial arts and not mention
this man, one man,
Mr. Bruce Lee.
Yes.
Professor, your thoughts on Mr. Bruce Lee, please.
Well,
that was my Bruce Lee. Did you like it?
No.
Okay.
He was certainly small in stature, almost no body fat to look at him. Very, very fast. So he had excellent technique. He could hit very hard. His famous punch with 1 inch off the person's chest.
Yes.
I mean, those types of things require a great deal of skill, and the skill and the technique is going to be more important than just brute strength.
Now, let me ask you this, because you brought up the 2 inch or the 1 inch punch, which he's famous for, and you see him just like an inch away from somebody's chest, bang, hits them, and then they fly back and fall down into a chair. First of all, is that showmanship? Is that physics? How does that happen if it is physics?
Well, he's going to get a great deal of kinetic linking starting down at the feet. I mean, he's going to be able to get a little bit of a push off the floor, turn the hips, turn the torso, get energy out of the legs, get it out of the rotating back. I mean, all of these things are going to come into play when that fist travels that 1 inch for the hit. I mean, it's going to be moving rather quickly, even in that 1 inch of gap.
Mm-hmm.
Professor, it's been a pleasure. Yeah. Best of luck with the new book when it comes out, The Science Behind Krav Maga. Thank you for being on the show once again.
Mm-hmm.
Great to be here. It's a lot of fun.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
A judo, a chop, chop, chop.
Well, that's our show, Chuck.
That's it. And I somehow am very bruised.
Yep. We covered a lot of bases.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, Krav Maga sounds an awfully interesting sport.
I love it.
And we learned not to mess with the professor because he has black belts, plural.
Who knew that? This guy's dangerous. Like, you know what I mean? He'll beat your ass and then write an equation of how he did it. That's insane.
Isn't it just? Right. That's Playing with Science for you. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
We look forward to your company in the future.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.